Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello, it's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. Tonight we have the amazing, the wonderful Mei Fong.
Hooray! Hello. Hi there, everyone.
You're a journalist, you're a writer. You're the most exciting person we've had on the podcast because you've come the furthest.
is that it? Is that how you define your interest in people?
You get the prize, man.
How far are we counting way back from China?
Because technically, mate, you've come from Australia, so...
That's right, I win.
Because you're like a proper, you know, you're a Pulitzer Prize winning author, Mei. What are you doing here?
I came for the wine. Yeah. I heard there was some good wine here, so you know, journalists.
Yeah, fuck woman's hour.
Yeah, come for the wine, stay for the swearing. I don't know, what do we do?
That's right.
No, because you're like a proper amazing person. You've written for Forbes, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. You're amazing.
Keep on here. I like
to hear this. Yeah, just keep blowing that smoke right up
what
your
I
ass.
I like it because you're American. You're just nodding and smiling. If you're British, you'd be going, oh, no, please.
Stop.
I'm shit. I'm completely shit.
Oh, the reason we've got you here today is that you've written an amazing book.
It's called One Child, The Story of China's Most Radical Experiment. What's it about?
One child?
Yeah.
It's motherhood in a nutshell. So basically, China had a population planning policy for the last 30-something years, and it limited a lot of people to just one child, about a third of all Chinese households. So that's what my book is all about, and all the crazy kind of things that have happened as a result of this, because it's been around for a whole generation. We have a whole generation of men who have no women. That's one of the problems they have. You have 30 million single men in China who will not be able to find women, because when you tell people that you're going to have one child, and a lot of people want sons in China, it's very Downton Abbey, really. It is.
It's exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah. And there's a name for these men, isn't it? Is it they're the branch that
yeah
doesn't...
they call them bear branches for
oh,
China
God.
Because they are the biological dead ends of their family tree.
Wow, that's jolly, isn't it?
What my favourite quote in your book is that it says that you're going to have a gigantic mass of horny young men in China because of this policy, and that there was almost 25 men for every woman or something like that. Some amazing statistic.
Yeah. Well, so here's how nature works out. For every 100 girls that are born, on average, 105 boys are born. Nature makes a few more boys to compensate, to make it equal, because boys are violent creatures and they kill themselves and die off.
I was going to say, some are a bit rubbish. You're going to lose a few.
Yeah, so you make a few.
One of them's going to stick its wet finger in an electric socket. It's gone.
Yeah.
You know.
Redundancies. There's some built-in redundancies there. So in places where they like boys more than girls, say India, for example, they also like boys more than girls. But at the same time, they didn't have a family limitation policy. But over there, there are about something like 110 boys on average born for every 100 girls. In China, where they both had the boy preference and a family limitation, it's the highest in the world. So you have about something like 117 boys born for every 100 girls. And in some places, it's even as extreme as 140, almost 140 boys born for 100
girls. It's like Jurassic Park when they learn how to hybridize themselves. Or is they all get eggs. It's like Jurassic Park, isn't it, mate?
It's raining men. Hallelujah, not quite.
So what's this meant for China?
Well, the problem is, there are a lot of people who can't start families, right? Especially the poorest. It's always the farmers, the guys who live out in the sticks, can't get women. Nobody wants to marry you. You don't want to live in the sticks if you can help and you've got choices now. So it's not great for those guys, obviously. And then on the bigger scale, there are all these big questions like, what does it mean when you have such a huge imbalance, right? Because places where you have lots of men and not enough women are not usually happy places. Think of prison yards.
Sounds horrible. Yeah. I've worked in video games. Tell me about it.
Yeah. There's evidence that there's more crime rates in places where there are bigger gender imbalances. And some sociologists even say, well, is this going to mean that China is going to be more warlike? They have this big theory that China is more muscular in its foreign policy. It's making more noises. It's going to be because of its imbalance.
Star Wars, when there's too much Jedi, they're like, we need more Jedi, get rid of the Sith. Then there's too much Jedi, it's too much, and they have to have more Sith back to bring balance to the Force.
There is an imbalance,
Do you think that I'm doing your Pulitzer Prize winning book justice by just comparing it to shit movies, May? Are you happy with that analogy?
Shit movies are good. Besides, Star Wars is not a shit movie. I live and die by Star Wars.
Even the prequels, May.
Oh, no, okay, I'll give you
that. I thought you were intelligent. I thought you were an intellectual.
Hayden Christensen must die.
Oh, well, you couldn't go that far,
Just melt him a bit and then turn him into a robot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's adequate.
So how did it all start? How did you start this book?
Well, I was working in China, and this was about 2008, so this was coming up to the Olympics. And in May of that year, they had a big earthquake, 8.0, major earthquake. It was China's biggest disaster. Over 70,000 people were killed. And so I had just come off. I was trying to sneak into Burma at the time. When they call it Myanmar.
As you do, yeah. Might nip down Burma for the weekend.
Got it again.
Well, they've got nice centre parks there, I've heard.
Oh, very lovely.
Myanmarese. So I was trying to sneak in there to report on another a cyclone that it just happened. Cyclone Nargis had hit that country too. They weren't letting in any foreign journalists. I was trying to sneak in through the border in Kunming. I didn't make it. I was kicked out.
What, the moustache didn't work and the funny hat?
Yeah, I don't know.
Foiled again!
We then gave it away! But so I was flying back and I missed it. Then after I thought, well, shoot, how do I write the story? And then I thought, okay, I'll follow a group of people back to Sichuan. Because Sichuan is kind of like the Mexico of China. It's very poor. A lot of people work, workers from that area, and they go work in all the other parts of China. They work in all the factories that make your iPhones, for example. So I run to the train station, and I find a group of construction workers, males and females. And they were all trying to get back home. And they, being migrant workers, they're very poor. They can't fly. It takes 3 days. So I followed them back, and then we found out that, it was all sad stories. Most of them had, had family that died. But more to the point, there were a lot of kids that died in the earthquake because the schools were badly built. But then even more on top of that, that area was actually a test pilot project for the one-child policy before they launched it nationwide in 1980.
Oh, so they did like a mini one.
Yeah, they did mini places because they weren't sure, okay, will this work? So 30-something years later, the big irony is that, not only did people lose their children in the earthquake, many of them lost their only children.
Mm.
Yeah. The way I saw it, I saw the earthquake as, not just a natural disaster, but it was just so horrible the way all these people had lost their kids and they were in terrible pain. And the country was just steamrolling all this because they wanted to cover this up. And
this is not
ahead.
The right time for this.
No, they were like, we are going to celebrate the Olympics. Let's
There's
got to
be
this.
Blue skies, clean air.
Green grass. We'll make it happen. Yeah. We'll make it so. And so that was what affected me. But at the same time, here's the thing. The other part of me was, when I was doing all these stories and interviewing all these people who had lost their only child, I discovered I was pregnant.
Mm.
And, I was like, 36, 37. I had infertility issues. I was juggling the whole idea. Well, can I be a mother? Can I be a foreign correspondent and a mother? How's this going to crimp my career? And then so I was like, wait a minute, I'm pregnant. And I was very happy about that. But at the same time, you know, I was also talking to people, and you, this is, it's almost obscene, right? Mm. And then 3 months into it, I went for my first trimester, you know, scan.
Yeah.
And they said the heartbeat had stopped. So, and that really wrecked me, but, you know, at the time, but I was trying not to be wrecked, but I was like, no, I'm going to do this.
That always works. That always works.
I'm fine.
It's like when I had a premature baby, I was like, I'm not going to be upset about this. I shall simply get on with it. And that worked for about 16 hours in my experience, and then you're fucked. You're totally fucked.
Stiff up levels. And then plus I was like, well, what have I got to complain about? These are all these people who are genuinely fucked, you know, and here's me, you know, okay, you know, I didn't even give birth. This is not the same thing at all. Stiff up lip, go on with it, I'll, you know, and soldier through. But at the same time, you know, and it's only looking back on it, I wasn't aware, it was just too much to deal with them. But then I realized that, you know, this was the start of it all. This was the point where I started thinking about motherhood and parenthood, and what happens when this powerful desire we all have to, you know, spawn is towards it. And you know, right before me, I had this big, you know, policy example of lots and lots of people who were not allowed to have, you know, the number of kids they wanted, and had all these severe repercussions. So I felt like that was a way to sort of get into the story and write about it. A lot of editors, advisors were very hesitant about me taking that kind of a personal, you know, my editor, my agent said, are you sure you want to write about your miscarriage and all this stuff? And there was this kind of woman stuff, you know.
Was he a man?
He was a man.
What a shocker.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's this part of, you know, that whole thing that sort of, that whole male establishment that sort of sees these kind of things as being not quite serious journalism, you know, too hysterical, too womanly, not, you know, I mean, like, think about it. When Mark Zuckerberg writes about his wife's miscarriage, you know, everybody's like, woohoo, this is so courageous, this is so wonderful. And I was like, if one in three miscarriages and, you know, one in three pregnancies end in a miscarriage, it's very common. So why is it A, taboo, and B, why is it that when a white man writes about it and about his wife, it's suddenly seen as groundbreaking? It shouldn't be if one in three is a miscarriage. Yeah.
So, look, I'm an idiot, as you may have gathered already, but I obviously knew China had a one-child policy, but to be honest with you, I didn't really understand how it was enforced.
Here's the thing. This was obviously a hugely unpopular policy, right? You know, you're telling people how many kids they have, you're telling them how many they shouldn't have, you're telling them to get sterilized or abortions.
So I guess that's what I mean. Like, what were the actual mechanics of, I know the policy existed, but how was it enforced?
Yeah, well, sticks. So this is strictly a place where you had sticks, not carrots.
Right.
Very few carrots. So the first stick is obviously, you had to make it hurt, right? Because people won't follow it if it doesn't hurt. So one, you do it by fines, you know, you charge, make it hurt in the pocket. So if you have a child that's out of quarter, if you have more than your allotted number, then you will have to pay a fine. And the fine is usually anywhere between 2 to 10 times your household income. So, wow. And it's very discretionary. So the officer in question is a lot, you know, obviously between 2 and 10 is a big difference, right? And they say today 2, tomorrow 3. So there's a lot of non-transparency about the process, a lot of money under the table, greasing the skids, just to sort of, you know, and one place varies from another. So you just never know, you know, you could be up the pot or pay very little, you know, you might. So that's one, money. And then for a long time when China first started this policy, a lot of people were peasant farmers. They didn't have any money. So you couldn't make it hurt for them that way. You confiscate as not much. So what they do is they go into your house, your farmhouse, take things from it. You know, they take your cow, your pig, and sometimes, you know, damage your house.
Grandmother?
That's a third one.
Sorry, beg your pardon.
Jumping to that.
Yeah, Jesus. So sorry, I read the book.
Yeah, so the third thing you do is also, detention. So let's say you have pregnant with your second or third child, unauthorized pregnancy. They say, okay, we want you to show up for an abortion. Let's say you don't want to show up for an abortion. You want to say, I want to carry this child the full term. Then you start hiding somewhere and try and avoid them. Then what they do is they say, okay, we'll take someone, a relative, you know, your mother or somebody, put you in jail. And then you send the void out with the village grapevine. Okay, so-and-so's mother's in jail and being detained there, and she will be until she shows up for that abortion that she's supposed to. And it's the same for sterilizations too, you know. Let's say you kept the rules, but you don't want to be sterilized. And, you know, judge me, some of these places did it like very conveyor belt style. So there were women who complained after that they were damaged, you know. And then sometimes it's your job. You could, you know, if you work for any kind of a government linked organization, let's say you taught in a university, let's say you work for a firm that had links to the government, you could lose your job. So there was a lot of pressure on you to do that. You know, there were people who was. I met this guy who was a lecturer, a law lecturer at a university, and then he had a second child, a boy, and they said, okay, $30,000 you have to pay that. And he said, I'm not going to. And so they took his wages. He lost his job. He also lost his company assigned housing, because a lot of the, you know, universities, they allowed you the apartment. So he lost that too. And then I think he went online and advertised himself as a slave. He said, I will sell myself to anyone for $30,000 to pay back this, you know, birth fine that we have. So these were all these kind of sticks. And then, of course, the worst one is the threat of forced abortions. You know, if you carry a child to full term, then, it's like getting past the goalpost. You're all right. But anything before then can sometimes be fair game.
So, really, even if you're, say, 8 months or something?
Yeah,
wow.
I have talked to birth enforcers who said, you know, and there was the most famous case happened in 2012. You know, that's pretty recent,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. There was a woman who was 7 months pregnant, and she wanted this child. She kept playing hide and seek, evading the birth police. But they caught her when she was 7 months. They dragged her off to jail. And at the same time, they were sending the husband text messages saying, you owe this much. If you want to have the second child, you're going to have to pay this much, $6,000. I think it was $6,000. Husband said, I can't pay this much right now. Please, please, give me some time to scare up this money. Please, please. And he said, no. And then so they then injected her, and she had a forcible abortion. And the reason why that story made so much noise was because of social media. You know, this was a time that all this stuff had been happening for years, but it's always been, you know, in the remote areas, the sticks, you know. So in this case, social media was around. This woman, Mrs. Fung, she was lying in her bed, and right next to her was the 7-month fetus, and it looked like a perfectly formed baby. And a relative of her snapped that picture with her cell phone. It went viral, and that's when a lot of people in China realized for the first time that this stuff is still going on. Yeah.
My youngest son was born at 7 months, so I find that particularly...
I find that particularly upsetting. Because I read it on the train the other day, and yes, Ellie's son was born at 7 months, and I thought, that's so criminal. You've ruined a baby's life, you've ruined a mother's life.
Yeah, and you know, and the funny thing is, like, just last year, right, late October, they made an announcement. Now you can all have two children. So, you know, 2012 to 2016, if it's 4 years difference, that woman can have had a second child. Right. And it wouldn't have made... But it's so arbitrary. Then, on the other hand, you also have a lot of people, especially people from outside China, who say, well, you know, the planet has way too many people. So, and China was a very poor country before. They really needed to scale down, you know, the population. Mm. So we think the one-child policy is a good idea. You know, and I see the point of view they have, because, you know, my family is from China. I do know about poverty, and I do know about people not having enough to eat. But the problem we all tend to think is, you know, it's one child and population control is one and the same thing. It's not. You can reduce the population. You can encourage people to have fewer kids and use contraception, all these other things, and send women to college without having to go DEFCON 1. And I still meet a lot of people who come up to me and say, we should all have a global one-child policy. We should all do this. And I say, really? You want to have someone come into your house and take you away for a forced abortion? How would you like that?
Oh, no, that's what I was... I think I found so overwhelming, and as I read in the book, that the woman was surrounded in the night in her house, chased down into a lake, and she stood in a lake, and these men surrounded her. You know, when you interview the ex-government officials, and they were very matter-of-fact about it, and that they got bonuses for how many abortions they got and things like that. And it just sort of struck home, because the dates and things you were mentioning were the same dates that I had my children, and here I was happily having my second child and all that sort of stuff. And there were women,
millions of dollars.
I just got drunk in a pub and I had a second kid in my lounge, in a blow up pool. And these women were the same with me. They wanted a baby, they wanted a family and all that sort of stuff. And I was just.
But
yeah,
that was just
so
one
amazing
part of it, the one-child policy. Just down to everyday living, it's like dating and marriage. And so, like, for example, you know, okay, the fact that you have, you know, 90% of all urban households, city places, have only one child. And also the fact that you're going to have this huge gender imbalance. What does it mean for dating? And the thing is, it means your parents, give you shit about getting married to a bazillion degrees, you know. So one day I remember I was walking along in a park in China. It was cherry blossom season. And I saw all these like little notices, you know, handwritten notices. And they were classified ads that parents had placed for their kids. You know, like, my daughter, age 29, born in the year of the rat, is seeking a husband, born a year, with middle age education, hopefully with a salary. And, you know, these were all being put up by parents.
Yeah, that's not weird. Yeah.
Without their kids' knowledge. Because most of the kids would be like, do not do this to me. Please do not.
Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine. Oh, my God. Imagine if your mom went on Tinder. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, this is pre-generation Tinder, right? Oh. And then, you know, I started taking some of these pictures, and some of these guys were, like, really agitated. And they're like, no, what are you doing? Please don't tell my daughter I'm doing this. She would be so mad at me if she knew.
Yeah, she will. Because it's not really okay. Will.
Yeah.
So, and I went to one of these mass dating things, you know. There are all these, you go, like, it's like speed dating. Every 6 minutes, they make you go around to different, and it's horrible. It's awful. They make you chant slogans. Love's great warriors.
I couldn't do that.
And then they make you do stuff like, all right, everybody in the circle, let's massage each other. And so I'm like, you know, I'm like rubbing some strange guy's shoulders, and then turn around, and he's like rubbing my shoulders. It's like sexy time.
Sexy time for me.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So China's got rid of the one-child policy now.
Sort of. I mean, there's still, you know, rules in place. You know, you can't just, it's not a free-for-all. Before you have your child, you still need to get a birth permit, all these things. If you break the rules, you're still going to have to pay all these fines. But I think it's on its way out. It has to be because, you know, you have this big problem. Not enough men. And the other big problem, which I didn't talk about a bit, was you have too many old people. I mean, and this is, you know, so China now... by 2050, 1 in 4 Chinese will be a retiree.
1 in 4 will be an old buffer.
So that's bigger than all of Europe. So basically, if...
That is a lot of cruises and slippers to manufacture. That is a lot of... Oh, my God. Oh, countdown will be on 8 hours a day. Oh. The snooker, the endless, just think of my own
Bingo!
Yeah. Oh, that's it. It will just be... Beijing will be renamed Bingo Jing. Yeah. That's it. That's going to be
So everybody's living longer, and there's nothing to do with the one-child policy. But... the fact is, you're going to have much fewer people to support that elderly population, which, by the way, is going to be bigger than all of Europe. So, you know, if China's senior citizens were to form their own country, they would be the third largest country.
And I would want to live there. I think it'd be amazing. All these Chinese grannies and granddads just like knitting endlessly. Like everybody going around in top quality woolens.
That's right.
Everyone
on a cake. It'd be great.
Yeah. Everyone will have an electric blanket. That's the dream. Yeah.
And be asleep by 8 o'clock at night.
Sounds all right. Do you have electric blankets in America?
They do. Yeah. And they always have these big dire warnings, you know, because it's America. Do not leave them on for, you know, more than 2 minutes.
Cook.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they have warnings in Starbucks cups, you know, you can imagine.
We don't mind a house fire in Britain. It's how we won 2 wars. Anyway.
Wonderful.
And you know, China's got, you know, like you said, we talk about all these old people, you know, who's going to be plugging in all those electric blankets for the old ladies?
Who's going to be changing your adult
them bare branches?
Just all your manservants.
It's not just that you got missing women, right? So you got China's got a missing branch. So what's the problem there is that, okay, so you want to grow your population now. How are you going to do that when you got missing women? Secondly, who takes care of old people, men or women? Women. Mm. So you got the missing women. So you fucked. It's not just a question of sheer numbers. It's the mix-up, right? It's the quality. Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, you might sort of call it like poetic justice in some sense. I sort of felt it a little bit that way because I am a Chinese daughter. And you can no conception. I am the fifth girl. My parents kept trying and trying and trying to have a boy. Because, you know, boys are so important. Because my father was the
sixth. Was this in China?
I am the third generation Chinese. And they call us overseas Chinese, Hua Qiao. And we are considered the most traditional. We hold on to the old values more because we didn't have anything like the Cultural Revolution to turn it upside down. So things like ancestor worship, the way things were done, that's all up there still. So I grew up in Malaysia. My father was the 16th son. My grandfather had 18 sons. And then he had
18
five.
Sons.
18 sons.
Wow.
And then he had five daughters. So you can imagine every time we showed up for a Chinese New Year gathering or anything like that, we would be like, oh, that, those are the girls. Yeah. it's wonderful that China is now belatedly realizing that they really do need women, that they need to value women. But at the same time, you know, it's really sad to stay for, you know, think of all these guys who can't get married, who can't find someone. You know, think of all the women who are under huge pressure now. Like, oh, can you please get married and get married now?
Yeah.
Women are considered, starting from the age of 25, you're considered a leftover, a spinster. They actually have a term for it. They call it leftover, you know, like, you know, stuff of doggy bags. And, you know, And here's the thing, right? The legal age for marriage in China for women is 20. So you go from 20 to 25, and it's from go to game over in just 5 years.
Oh. Because that's when you've just graduated. From uni, you're establishing your career.
And probably just starting to date for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, if I married one of the people I dated between the ages of 20 and 25, you've made me cry. So, yeah, I feel like that's enough book chat.
All I want to say, it's a brilliant book. I think everybody should read it. And thank you for writing it because... yeah, there were so many people who didn't have a voice, and you gave them a voice.
Well, I also wanted to sort of, you know, at some point in our lives, we all come to that point, do we want to have children or not? If we have children, how much is this going to cost us, you know, emotionally, financially?
A lot! It's millions! If you're wondering, everything!
So I wove that into the book because this is one of the issues you face, right? Especially now, I think we're, you know, especially for societies like, you know, England and so on. And at the same time, you know, at some point, all these societies, all these nations are sort of like, you know, hang on a minute, if nobody have kids, we won't have any workers. If we don't have any workers, our economy is going to go to pot. So, women, have at it, go to it, make it so. And you're like, what, are we taps? You know, do we turn it on, turn it off? No! You know, I'm not going to have more kids unless, you know, you throw in some, you know, free massages and free education and free healthcare and free...
And a new puppy.
I want a pack of Marvel Lights. I want Argos voucher, at least 25.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's what I want to write about. So one of the things I wrote about in the book was when I wake up in hospital in Beijing. I'd just gone through IVF and I was just dying to pee because they make you, they'd extracted my eggs and they tell you to drink a lot of water beforehand because they want to see all your tubes nice and, you know, in full relief. So I woke up and I was like, I gotta pee. And then the nurse said, no, you just lie down flat. You know, you don't get up for the next 40 minutes. And I was like, oh, but I gotta go. And she's like, okay, fine. I'll get you a bedpan, but you gotta pay me 20 renminbi. Because this is the thing about China, right? Before you, they don't give you any medical treatment unless you pay for it up front. You know, every shot, every syringe. So I was like, I'm lying there in my hospital gown, you know, I'm naked. And I'm like, what? You're not going to give me a big pen until I give you 20. Why do you think I got this money hidden up?
Surprise! Full of bloody eggs. I had to take all the notes out to get the eggs up there. Jesus. That's book chat then. Let's have some May chat. Let's talk about you, mate. Tell us about your family.
Okay, so as I said, I'm one of five girls. And the fifth one, so which means I was the last shot at a boy.
Did they have a boy after that? That was
no,
it?
No, those are my mother said, this is it, I'm closing shop, this is the last one. My father apparently didn't even show up at the hospital on the day of because he was really pissed.
Oh my god, yeah. That's a lovely story to grow up
with,
isn't
it? It's just warms the cockles of the heart.
Oh man.
And then your dad didn't show up and we all cried.
So I think the time when my father really sat up and sort of thought, well, okay, she's worth something as a girl, was, you know, I sent you a photo I took with Queen Elizabeth, and next to that man next to me is my father. So he got a chance to meet the Queen. And
was that through you?
That was through me, because I had written some, this is the Commonwealth, Malaysia was part of the Commonwealth, so we had this thing called the Commonwealth Essay Competition that people in the Commonwealth could enter, and I had entered and written some really boring, fucked up essay, I can't even remember what it was about. But I got a minor prize, and because she was in Malaysia that year, the Queen was, they said, okay, why don't you invite some nice young schoolgirl to go, and I got a perm. I got a perm because I was going to meet the Queen. This was the 1980s, you remember? Flash dads, you know,
yeah.
Glenn Close and Fatal Attraction, you know, that
you
whole
thing.
You
need a curl, mate.
So
you
I thought, you know, I'm going to spruce up for the Queen of England. So I went and got a $20 student perm. I don't know what I was thinking. I look like a poodle, you know.
Oh, amazing.
You saw
amazing.
The picture, you know.
You look great. No, there's a lot of body. There was a lot of body in that hairdo.
Just a small town girl on a Saturday night.
Did you meet the Queen, and was she like going along the line? I said, hello, yes. Yeah. And then she went, oh, babes, what happened to your hair? What did you do?
Too dry.
She's like, here, take my hat.
Are you a royalist, May, then?
Do you think
that a system that has an unelected head of state who lives off the people through the means of tax is inherently flawed and unfair?
I think it's basically boils down to the hair issue. the hair apparent. How do we get here again?
Oh, just because I hate the royals and Helen loves them,
love
so I like any
royals.
Excuse to slag them off.
So anyway, because of the Queen, I said, oh, woo, I can write and I can meet famous people and have cool stuff and maybe get out of Kuala Lumpur, which is the name of the city I was born in. And you know what Kuala Lumpur means? It means muddy river mouth. Romantic name.
Yeah.
Book
me a ticket.
I love KL.
There are many things wonderful at KL, but when I was growing up there and I was an unwanted girl and I wasn't sure I was ever going to get to college and my father didn't want to spend any money educating us.
You can tell it takes the edge off.
True.
Yeah. Not so fun.
Not so much, you know. Backpacking around with your banana pancakes.
No, no.
Like her experience may have been slightly different.
Just going
you
from
just
one roti Chennai to the next. Yeah, no, I can understand.
I was lucky, so I went off and I saw the world, and now I am a housewife in Potomac, Maryland.
Wow.
Right to Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Yeah, and I look at the women in my Pilates class and I'm working, and I'm like, what am I doing here?
Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, you cunts.
No, it's not that. It's just that American suburbia is the strangest, most foreign place I've ever lived in.
Really?
Know?
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's like, well, for example, okay, so we live in a pretty ritzy neighborhood, which we moved into for the good schools. And all the houses, they have these homeowners associations which say you can't do certain things to your house because we lowers the tone. So, for example, I was in a Pilates class one day making conversation with a woman next to me. I said, oh, it's a nice sunny day. It's too bad they don't let us hang our clothes out in the clothesline so we can save on this energy and have nice, clean, clothes. I didn't understand America. Why is it that 365 days a day you got to use a dryer?
That is ludicrous. I didn't know that. That's ludicrous.
That's stupid. Given where we are with the climate, this is stupid. And she looked at me like she thought I was so low class. She's like, what? You want to hang a clothesline in your yard? Ooh, who is this? Next you're gonna want a goat or something. Put a goat out there with your wash line.
You
lower class bohemian
with your weird Halloween costumes.
And I was like, oh no, what am I doing here? here, you know. I used to go and cover natural disasters. Now I'm doing a supermarket run. But this is at the same time, this is what I write into the book, too. I mean, this is what parenthood is, right? It's the biggest motherfucking adventure of your life.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of dull bits in between sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you miss it then? Do you miss that whole thing of, yeah, like racing to the center of earthquakes?
I do, because, you know, you get the adrenaline rush. You know, the other day when I was coming out here to UK, I realized I hadn't used my passport for a long time. I used to have it in my back pocket all the time, stuffed full of visas. And I was like, no, I'm traveling now. I'm just buying broccoli.
I'm just wiping a lot of things. I'm just wiping things.
I'm wiping butts.
I'm shouting a lot.
I'm being a chauffeur. Being a mother is three quarters chauffeur, right?
Yeah.
And then the other quarter is picking up Legos off the floor. Yeah. And, you know, but, you know, there are scummy mummies. There are lots of us out there. In fact, yeah. I think America's got tons of scummy mummies because... Yeah. We have no help. I mean, you have no maternal benefits. You know, very few places. It's not mandated, you know, if you're lucky. Do you know, when I was pregnant and I was working for Dow Jones in America, it's an American company, they count it as, they call it disability. There's no such thing as maternity leave. It's called disability because you're pregnant, you're disabled.
Oh, yes, that's right. not that I'm giving birth to a new human being or, you know.
And raising a potential taxpayer.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah.
It's disability.
Yeah. So how many children do you have, mate?
I have two twin boys, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So and then you had them through IVF, but you did the IVF in China, is that right?
I tried it in China, it didn't work, right. So ended up doing it in California where it did. I did 1.5 times and a half time with the frozen eggs worked. That's a bit too much info for you.
No, that's amazing. Any tips for twins? Any tips for...
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're two and everything happens all at once. But I don't know any better because I never had singletons before, so I just deal with it. I still, for me, I think that the difficulty is always juggling my Asian sensibility, which is, you know, which is the way I was brought up, which, you know, speak and you're not spoken to, and being serious. And, you know, and let's face it, in Asia, we were whacked, the physical punishment all the time. And I grew up in America now. I mean, I'm raising my kids in America now, and you could not whack your children. Child services would have your hide, you know, and I understand that because intellectually, and I'm telling brother, you know, kid A not to hit kid B. How am I going to tell? Don't hit your brother. Whack.
Exactly.
It's wrong. Yeah. But it's very hard for me not to sort of do that by instinct because that was how I was raised. So, you know, my hand goes up and I have to hold myself by instinct. Mm. You know, not, even just a light smack on that wrist, which, you know, was nothing in Asia. It's considered bad form in America, which is almost to the other extreme. I mean, there was once I was in a car with a friend of mine and he was like, oh, would you like a story? He's telling his kid. Would you like a scary story or a happy story? Would you like a witch or this? Would you like... And by the end of, like, you know, half an hour, I was like wanting to poke my eye out with
him. Just tell the fucking story.
I tell the story and you listen to it and you like it whether you want it or not.
I think it's time for the Scummy Mummy Confessions.
Hooray!
So my confession happened literally, I think, 2.5 hours ago. And my lovely neighbour popped around. She's moving out today, actually. It's very sad. And Pete opened the door, blah, 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 little chat. And the next thing I heard was Charlie going, for goodness sake, I'm doing a poo! Naked on the upstairs bathroom, which is fully visible from the front door.
Yeah.
And luckily Megan has a 7-year-old son, so she understands what we're going through. But yes. Helen, have you a permission for us?
Yes, I do. I want to say a big thank you to my childminder on a Wednesday who provides my children with, like, outside play. They go to this, like, forest school. They'd had a lovely time. They'd done pond dipping. They'd found newts. They'd had, like, baked potatoes. And then one of my kids said, Mummy, can you come to the loo with me? And they'd soiled themselves. So I had to, after, like, having all this lovely wholesome stuff, hide a pair of pooey knickers, like, up my jumper.
And then
like, kind of empty it into my backpack and pretend everything was fine. It's like, oh, it's so natural and nature-y. And then just go home and put a pair of stinky pants in the bin. So that was nice. That was nice. A nice little
time.
Nice little end to that, you know, wholesome experience.
May, do you have a confession for us?
Oh, well, I've been trying to organize my closets and stuff, you know, because I've got, like, crap all over the place. And I've been reading that Marie Kondo.
I love that book!
My God, you guys are now married. Oh, Ellie, my God. Is in
she
love
might
with
hate
you.
It, though. Do you hate it?
I hate it.
Oh, no!
Get out! I'm condoing you! I'm condoing you! You don't spark joy anymore.
Well,
I'm joking, of course.
The thing she says that sparks joy, throw away the stuff that sparks joy. The only thing I want to throw away was that book, and that sparked a whole lot of joy.
Now, mate, it's my friend, Ellie. She is mine!
It's
and you're very happy together.
Impossible
in your messy,
standards.
Filthy houses.
Impossible standards. How can you just... She's saying that you tidy up one time and that's it. If you do it right, you never need to tidy up again. That is bullshit. Bullshit! You know it!
Mate, look around you at this pristine...
Look, the pile of books in the bathroom.
Mantelpiece full of Lego, you know.
Giant egg.
Look, she didn't have kids when she wrote that book.
That's
defense,
it! She never did! That's the thing!
She does not know the uncontrollable chaos.
I'm waiting for the sequel. It's going to be very different.
The life-changing magic of having a fucking lie down.
Yes.
Even I accept that, you know.
Anyway.
So, mate, I'm sorry, your confession... Was Kondo related?
Oh, well, my confession is I threw the book out.
Right.
I love you so much.
Well, we've come to the end of the podcast. That's it from us. And from Helen and May, the nurses in the corner. me and Marie Kondo will be over here folding our pants.
That's right.
We hope you've enjoyed listening. If you have, please tell your friends, leave us an iTunes review, and follow us on the social media.
That's right. That's right. We're on Twitter. We're on... Ooh. I think that was us getting a tweet right now. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And I just want to say thank you to Skinny Prosecco, who provided all the fizz.
And the fun. Let's face it.
And the fun. We're drunk. We've drunk two bottles of Skinny Prosecco, which is great. It's half the sugar, and it's just bloody delicious. And thank you for sending us free stuff.
And
the book.
Your book, it's called One Child, The Story of China's Most Radical Experiment. It's by Mei Fong. Mei, you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And
thank
thanks
you.
For the Skinny Prosecco.
Oh, you are welcome.
Cheers. That's it.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. But I grew up in a culture where if you went home and you said you had, you know, an A minus, you're like, well, it's not B.
Yeah.
I actually dressed up as Tiger Mom one Halloween that did you.
Sorry.
I wore like this long Chinese robe and I put on a hat and I pinned some little stuffed tigers on it and I pinned all these signs to my back that said something like, Yale is just a safety school.
Amazing.
That's
the best Halloween costume for a mother I've ever heard of. That's brilliant.
Oh, there's this one that said, Asian moms, sometimes Wong, always right.
Wow. So, you could do that. We
know.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.